This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. You're listening to The Kevin Kelly Show, exclusively here on placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. And now, here's your host, the voice of Ring of Honor, Mr. Kevin Kelly.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly, and we are ready for another edition of the Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation. I'm part of the Place to Be Nation. I'm proud to be part of the Place to Be Nation, and we thank you for joining us. Now, I know a lot of people are downloading this episode of the Kevin Kelly Show through iTunes or Stitcher or Podbean or wherever you might find it. In fact, Justin will tell you a little bit later on where you can find the Kevin Kelly Show each and every week. Maybe you'll find a more convenient path. But each and every episode that we record, every 2 weeks, certainly we try to make unique, different, and special. Tonight, we've got two very special guests. One is an old friend of mine, and the other is a relatively newer friend of mine. I used to work with Pete Gass together in the WWE. That's right, we were coworkers and acquaintances and friends. Well, maybe not friends. Coworkers. We were having this discussion off the air. But anyway, Pete Gass was part of the Mean Street Posse, and as soon as we saw Shane McMahon come out on Raw a couple of weeks ago, we said, we got to get Gass. So that's why Gass is going to be on the show tonight. Pete Gass was a childhood friend of Shane McMahon's and found his way into the WWE when Shane McMahon did, now 15 years ago. So what's been Gass doing ever since then? What does he think of Shane's involvement at WrestleMania? And will the Mean Street Posse reunite at the big event on April the 3rd? I will ask that question. I doubt he will answer it, but I will ask Pete Gass point blank if we can expect a Mean Street Posse reunion coming up in Dallas. And my other guest here on the show, the Kevin Kelly Show this week, will be none other. He's one of the hottest guys in professional wrestling right now. And he's a Ring of Honor star whose merchandise has sold out. And yet, he has never been in a world title match. He's never held a title. He has not won very, very many times, but it doesn't seem to matter. And not only that, but he's also a big star in Japan, probably more in the locker room than out. And he's Chris Jericho's favorite wrestler. That's right. Cheeseburger is going to be our guest. Cheeseburger makes his debut here on the Kevin Kelly Show. How did this charismatic, physically unlikely person become this hot phenom in pro wrestling? I'm not making it up. This is not hyperbole. This cat's over. And how did he get that way? Why? Who are his influences? What makes him special? What makes him tick? And where did he get the name Cheeseburger? So we'll talk to him here on the show. So our pal Justin Rosero, as I mentioned before, has a lot of duties, wears a lot of hats. And one of them is to jump in now with some hot takes, some pith, something that gets the ball rolling, the show moving, and something, because I'm languishing tonight, brother. I'm feeling it. A little rough, a little tired.
Wow, you had a lot more energy in that Kevin Kelly sex tape I just finished editing. So once we leak that out, once we leak that out, we'll be good to go.
Told you to burn that
leak
thing.
Leak being the keyword, yes.
Oh, I was sorry. If there was if there was a Kevin Kelly sex tape, there would be a lot of apologizing. Trust me. Oh, I'm so sorry.
not going after that one.
A lot of crying. Yeah. It just would be embarrassing.
So does Hogan wrap up this lawsuit in time for Mania?
Who gets more money, Hogan or Aaron Andrews?
It's going to be hard to top 55 mil, but Aaron probably is not going to see all that because I think half of it's due to from the guy who videotaped her, and I doubt he's got 28 million laying around. The other half is coming from the Marriott guy, so we'll see what she takes home.
And so are things looking good as we record this show on a Monday night? Are things looking good for Hogan in the court?
I'm going to be honest. I haven't followed, I've been kind of following the quotes for the laughter of it all. the absurdity of Hogan on the sand with his do-rag, but I haven't actually like read any of the legal analysis to see if, you know, he's in trouble or not.
They don't have a Roger Cossack or anybody over at the Worldwide Leader following this gimmick?
Well, no. And when you're from this area, all you hear about lawsuit-wise is still Deflategate, of course, was back in the news. Last week, they're saying not looking good for Brady with this new lawyer. They're going to overturn the ruling, and he'll get a suspension back, and then he'll appeal, and we'll go through the whole dog and pony show again. So that's the hot talk around here on the local radio. And there was some Aaron Andrews stuff as well, and that, just no matter where you are, when you're talking about like commenters or radio callers, leads to like just nothing good. Like, it's nothing good at all. The comments and thoughts that people have in this whole situation, but digress.
People are disgusting.
Yes.
And gross. I don't know why anybody reads the comments on any message board. I was the reason I'm tired, and I should tell everybody this, I was out in Colorado this weekend, and I was not, you know, enjoying what is legal there in Colorado.
It sounded a little sleepy, so.
No. I was actually teaching. I was part of a group, myself and my pal and arch rival, Brutal Bob Evans. We went to the Mercury Pro Wrestling Academy in, I think it's Westminster, Colorado, or Denver, Colorado. Mm-hmm. And basically taught and worked with their worked with the students there for 2 days. And they had a show Saturday night in they have the school inside an MMA training center. So not only do, you know, so at the same time while there was wrestling training going on Saturday morning, there were also people in the octagon and on the amateur mats and doing, you know, kicking the heavy bags and weight training. It's a whole big facility. So it was really cool. The show was a lot of fun. And the name of the promotion is NRW, which I can't remember what the acronym is for. But I'll give a little shout out to those guys in a couple of weeks. And because I got to check out the TV show, see what it looks like, see what it's shot. But I think it looks pretty good. From where I sat, it very much reminds me of OVW.
Any names and, we'd know from the kind of the internet indie circle?
Probably not. Well, the only name that I saw, and I want to make sure I say his name right, because his first name is Martin, and his last name is...
Bit hard, he's on his picture in Martin, like the sitcom right now.
Martin, no, he currently wrestles on Lucha Underground.
Oh, okay.
And he wrestles as Marty the Moth.
There you go. Marty
the Moth. He's not a little dude. He's a big dude.
Big dude.
And he was great. And there was a guy he used to be in NXT, but he's not there anymore because he got let go. And I don't remember what his character's name was. He really didn't do much at NXT. That was part of the problem. He couldn't break through. He was very frustrated. Hmm. But he's another guy, 6'5". He kind of looks like Mark Jindrak. And but he's got a good amateur background. He's really, really talented. Then they got this other guy called Dozer, like short for Bulldozer. Mm-hmm. He's tremendous. And it was a lot of fun. Nikita, beautiful diva who used to be in OVW. She was there.
I'm Nikita.
Yes. And our host, Matt Yaden, and all of his trainers and the staff. It was just a great time. So I got home. After landing in Baltimore, driving home, it was almost 3:30 this morning, and then get up, go to work, and so here we are. But it's awesome. It's great, man. I was very excited.
Very good. So you don't even take a day off on these days? That's it? You just roll right in the office?
No, just go right in.
Yeah.
That's it. You go work. I got to try to milk as much PTO time as I can, you know, because between Ring of Honor, like, for example, okay, so Saturday we've got Philly, which is easy. And go to ROHWrestling.com to check out all of the match listings for the Philadelphia event. It's going to be a huge card, a huge night. Cheeseburger teams with the Briscoes. So if that gives you any indication, it's just going to be wild and crazy. The Young Bucks, the Addiction, and the Reunited Motor City Machine Guns in a triple threat tag. So the card is jammed. It's going to be a huge night. Then 2 weeks, We will be in, or 2 weeks after that, of course, is WrestleMania, or 3 weeks after that, WrestleMania. So for that weekend, we will be down in Dallas with Supercard of Honor on the 1st and 2nd of April. And those matches will be announced later on this week. Plus, we're going to be announcing the next Ring of Honor tryout camp, which will take place in the month of April. So get ready for that.
And then you'll be here at the end of the month.
We've got April 30th in West Warwick, Rhode Island.
Yes.
April's going to be a very busy month because we've got the two events for Supercard of Honor in Dallas. We've got a camp. We've got San Antonio. And then we got West Warwick, Rhode Island.
Sorry, all the hotbeds. Excited, though. Excited to see you soon. I'll be excited to see a full night. Somehow I coerced my wife on her birthday weekend to come to the show. She hasn't been to a live wrestling show since, I want to say, like 2003, some SmackDown she came to with me. So I don't think she's been to one since then. Somehow it sounded good to her. I don't know if I just got her half asleep or what, but on her birthday weekend, we'll be attending Ring of Honor at the West Warwick Civic Center. So,
and I hope that there will be, you know, another gift besides wrestling.
No, I paid for the ticket. What the hell else am I going to do?
Well, I
get our cheeseburger t-shirt.
You got to do more than that. She's the mother of your children.
Yeah.
She works hard. She puts up with you.
Okay, I'll come up with something else.
Thank you.
I'll ask Dan McGinn's woman to buy some shoes for her. We'll be good to go. All right, so you mentioned Mania, Kev.
Yeah. A
lot of swirl going on because this weekend is this big network special in Toronto. And the main event, Dean Ambrose taking on Triple H for the WWE Heavyweight title. And the, you know, scuttlebutt or maybe wishful thinking, because I feel like we come back to this every other week here. You know, as the shows go on, you keep finding ways to try and convince yourself that we're not going to get what it seems like we're going to get. And the word is, do they hotshot something? Do they put the belt on Ambrose and mix up this top, you know, kind of blasé top of the Mania card? Do they throw a wrench into the plans? Right now, of course, Triple H, Roman Reigns, and Dean Ambrose versus Brock Lesnar in a street fight are the planned matches. And I guess on SmackDown, Ambrose cut a promo and said, if he wins the title, they should, and he just kind of threw, you know, offhand comment, throw us all in the cell at Mania and let us all fight it out. And that got some ears perked because it's like, A, it sounds like a much better idea than what's going on. And B, sometimes when they put that level of, you know, comment or thought out there, it's kind of like, why mention something that specific? And you know the cell's already going to be there, so it's not that out of the realm of possibility that something could go down like that, right?
Well, I think that – I think what we're doing is we're kind of taking away from the one match that has everybody talking, and that's Shane and The Undertaker.
Right, and we'll get to that one.
Well, I know, but do they need to change the top of the card because they're – a match in the middle of the card has everybody interested? And why now? Why pull the trigger?
Well, because the warning signs, and they've been there with Reigns, and we may just be willfully ignoring them, the fact that they've ignored all the warning signs and are just plowing ahead that, you know, fine,
right,
they're just going to do it. But, you know, he wins the match at Fastlane, and he's definitely headed to Mania. And now, all of a sudden, he's off TV. They do this bullshit nose injury, and he's looks like a pussy. I mean, Triple H beat the shit out of him, and he goes and runs and hides, and now he's not even on TV.
But wait, what if he had legitimate surgery?
Steve Austin had a broken neck, legitimate surgery, and they wanted him on TV. He was on TV, right?
No, Vince has always kind of had a policy against that.
He was pretty much on TV every single week. I mean, it's on the WWE Network. I don't care if he was off out of the
that's a different circumstance.
How's a different circumstance? This is their top guy, the guy that's going to win the championship at WrestleMania, their top guy, and you're having nose surgery a month before the show that keeps you off your flagship show leading into WrestleMania.
Yeah, I thought he had like some sort of deviated septum or something that was going on.
He can't cut it out for another few weeks. And even if he did, okay, so even if he has the surgery and it's a nose surgery, you're telling me that keeps you off TV for multiple weeks before WrestleMania?
I don't think he can do anything physical. I
he
think that's the problem.
Physical. Just,
but it bleeds like constantly.
No, come on.
No, seriously, that I've never had that surgery.
You cut a 5-minute promo and your nose is all banded. At least make him look tough. But anyway, my point is that we're getting off the track. You got Dean Ambrose, who took the same shit kicking and they're having him hobble to the ring and pull himself up, and the crowd is getting behind him week after week and cheering him on because he looks like this badass that won't say die, and Brock Lesnar's murdering him, and here he is driving an ambulance back to... He's like, you know, they're doing all this stuff with him, and Reigns is sitting at home, and whether it's legit or not, he looks kind of like a pussy. You know what I mean? Like, he's just sitting at home doing nothing while Ambrose is up there getting killed and still dragging his ass to the ring and cutting promos and fighting for titles. It just, it doesn't look great. And, you know, there are those out there that think Reigns has been set up to fail by some. There are those that just think they don't know how to book him. They're just stupid. And I don't know which it is, but it's not, he's not being handled like a guy that's going to be winning the world title at WrestleMania. I'll put it that way.
It is, they've plowed ahead. You said that word before, and, you know, we knew from when you saw them live at the Royal Rumble, over a year ago, that it was not working, not going to work. Nothing was going to change. And now here we are, and fans are there's nothing different about fan attitude now about Roman Reigns than there was over a year ago. So I don't know why they would panic now. I don't know why they would change course now. There hasn't been anything that's shown me that anything is different. It's the same thing. It's the same problem, and at least they have something else that's somewhat marketable.
Right, but
other than
at
the WrestleMania brand.
So if you look at last year, the path was the same, right? They plowed ahead. At Rumble, they went ahead with it, even though they knew deep down it was a bad idea. And especially having Daniel Bryan in the match, gets eliminated. The Rock comes out, gets booed. Okay, so they do Reigns versus Bryan at Fastlane. And you start thinking, all right, maybe they realize they screwed up. We'll have Bryan take his title shot, or maybe they make it a three-way or do something. No, Reigns wins, and everything seemed lost. Here we go. And the match ends up being awesome. Him and Brock Lesnar was tremendous at WrestleMania. But they still got cold feet and didn't pull the trigger. What has changed this year in a positive way for Roman Reigns versus last year, besides the fact that they just need to blow their load and get it out of their system so we can move on? I mean, what puts them in a better position this year to have him? Triple H is getting cheered, beating him up. Triple H, the guy that's been the most, you know, miserable, annoying heel for the last 4 years on TV, is getting cheered vociferously as he beats the crap out of your top face. I mean, something has to click at some point. Do they really end Mania with this guy getting booed to close the show?
Okay. They denied him his moment a year ago.
Mm-hmm. And they should have just done it in retrospect.
Yes.
They should have just got it over with.
Right.
Because that match at least ended up being really good.
And now what you have is a guy who's not over at all, and Triple H is over like Rover. I read some, I can't remember who to attribute this tweet to, but we'd be killing Triple H if not for the fact that he has brought the fans NXT. So he gets a big pass.
I mean, you really have to separate, you know, Triple H, the backstage guy, versus, you know, unless you believe, like some out there, that he's actually behind this Roman Reigns sabotaging backstage.
You, how dare you take this back? Triple H would never practice the dark arts like that, would never sandbag anybody, never intentionally go out of his way to make anybody ever look bad. How dare you, Scott Steiner? I mean, come on. Rob Van Dam. Come on, Kane. Stop it.
Speaking
Damn
of Colorado,
it.
Yes, Rob Van Dam. But the I'm not going to get into the specifics behind it. There are theories out there of the political hits, as some say, that Reigns has been set up to fail for well over a year now, leading up to this show. But at the end of the day, it looks like they're still going to just go ahead and do it. You know, they've handled Ambrose so well the last few months. They had an easy out if he just would have won that match at Fastlane and just had him be the guy, and then you set Reigns up as your heel. Like, we talked about it a lot leading up to that show. They didn't do it. So you kind of wonder, what is the end game? I mean, so let me ask you this. So, you know, you mentioned Shane and Taker. If the card stays as presently constituted, what do they run as the main event to close the show?
They run Reigns and Triple H. Nothing changes. You got me?
Yeah, I got you. But do you think, I mean, you know, Triple H has been burnt twice before now. Happened at WrestleMania 18. Hulk Hogan and Rock stole the show. Him and Jericho played to a pretty dead theater. And then WrestleMania 25, 7 years later, there he is with Randy Orton, crowd dead, heatless for their match because Undertaker and Shawn Michaels tore the house down. And 7 years later, here we are again. History repeating itself, right? 2016, WrestleMania 32. And I'm not saying Shane and Undertaker has the hype or expectation that Hogan and Rock and Taker and Michaels had. But you know it's going to be a crazy spot fest in some ways. You know it's going to have all kinds of overbooking. It's going to be a wild match. Do they risk running that early? Do they risk running a Brock Lesnar-Dean Ambrose-crazed brawl? And then you have Triple H and Reigns go out there and have a regular match. Like, to me, that is a death knell city. And that's what happened at 25, you know, and 18. And especially to see Triple H and Orton, when Triple H and Orton went out there and just had a regular match after their intense feud. And then after the undercard was filled with, you know, more heated affairs, this is going to happen the same thing here. You're going to have a wild Hell in a Cell match. You're going to have a crazy street fight with two guys that everyone loves, Dean Ambrose. Even if you don't say Shane Taker, look at Ambrose Lesnar. Everyone loves both of those guys. And they're going to go crazy beating the shit out of each other. You know, is Triple H going to sit there with the writing on the wall and do it a third time in 21 years? Every 7 years, the same thing.
So where are they going to do that match on the card and hope to get a better or different reaction?
Well, I don't think they can get a different reaction. But my point is they're not going to close the show with a heatless main event and no one cheering your champion. If you put it in the middle, you're not going to get necessarily the reaction you want, but it's kind of out of the way. Reigns is your champ. And then you have, you know, let the crowd be hot for the big two matches. And on the surface, it goes against everything they should do. The championship should always be last. That should be it. Shane McMahon and The Undertaker should not be your featured match at WrestleMania. It just shouldn't be. I'm just saying it's hard for me to sit there if I'm a creative member or Vince McMahon and say, shit, look at our history in situations like this. This crowd is not going to buy into this Triple H Reigns match at all unless they're still fired up and they just want to boo Reigns. Like, that's the only way. Unless they do something crazy somehow in there.
What if they changed his name to Boo Reigns?
They might as well at this point.
And they just let the people have their way with it and go ahead, Boo Reigns.
I mean, even Rock in his corner is not going to work. Like, we saw that already, and they booed him. Even if that's their plan, you know?
Why can't people just enjoy? Why do they have to get so upset, so emotionally involved?
Well, they did. Last year they did.
I know.
They got him last year. They broke him. Like, that match was awesome, him and Brock. Like, I think it would have been okay. You know, especially since it was outdoors. This year it's back in, I know it's a stadium still, but they're indoors, so the noise may not dissipate as much. And, you know, looking back, as great as Rollins was as champion in the ring, I think they would have been much better served just to pull the trigger and get it over with.
Yeah.
Get it out of their system. I think they'd be more likely to have backed off this time around if they had just done it last year.
I think if we go back and if we tell McGinn to go back in the archives, I remember us having that same discussion.
Just get it done.
Not get it done, but that the unintended consequences of jerking the rug out from underneath Reigns,
right,
and putting the belt on Rollins, while that's what you wanted to do storyline wise, it was at great injury towards Roman Reigns. He may not be the guy.
Right.
And now here we are a year later, having the exact same conversation about trying to figure out ways to make it work. Mm-hmm. Why doesn't it work? Will they sacrifice the main event spot for a match that won't work?
And it's not even going to be his first reign now because he ended up winning at Survivor Series. And then they took it off him. They should have kept it on him at this point. It's just
Jesus.
They really just botched this thing from beginning to end. And
hey, you know, I want to. We'll talk more. We'll talk the whole Mania card.
Yeah.
In 2 weeks. And tonight, of course, as I mentioned, our focus is on, we'll talk a little bit about Shane and The Undertaker when Pete Gass is on board here in a little bit. I did want to run the card real quick for this Saturday in Philly, mm-hmm, because I mentioned that our other guest, Cheeseburger, is going to be teaming with the Briscoes for the first time ever against War Machine and Moose. So which one of these things doesn't belong? And unfortunately, that's going to be Cheeseburger. Triple threat tag match that I told you about, the Young Bucks versus the Addiction versus Motor City Machine Guns. That's going to be incredible. Adam Cole and Roderick Strong team up to take on Red Dragon. And after the announcement that our pal Kenny Omega couldn't make it to Philly, New Japan officials, Ring of Honor officials got together. Kushida was booked. So let's have Kushida defend the junior heavyweight title, the IWGP junior heavyweight title against ACH. That's going to be a great treat. Women of Honor, six-woman tag, Mandy Leon, Sumi Sakai, Jenny Rose versus Kyoko Kimura, Veda Scott, and Taylor Hendricks. That's going to be fantastic. And the main event for the world title, Matt Sydal goes after Jay Lethal for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Sydal's on a roll. He beat Adam Cole to earn this shot. That's the main event for this Saturday at the 2300 Arena as Ring of Honor presents the Conquest Tour, bell time 7:30. Yours truly will be there and a host of others. So there you go. That's the Philly story for this Saturday. Well, should we take a time out? What should we do? I'm confused.
Yeah, man, I need to relax. You know, I was a big Mean Street Posse fan back in the day. I need to kind of, you know, compose myself, gather my thoughts, think about what I'm going to do when Pete Gass arrives. He was one of my favorites back in the Attitude Era. I thought their matches with Patterson and Briscoe were fun, and they were a big part of that good SummerSlam match with Shane McMahon and Test. The great vignettes leading up to WrestleMania 15, sitting on the couch at ringside. A lot of good Pete Gass moments for me as a fan. So, yeah, I'm pretty pumped up. Maybe we'll need a trip to the Denver dispensary, you know, kind of relax a little.
All right, well, let's do this. Let's take a quick time out here on the Kevin Kelly Show. We'll get Pete Gass on the horn, and we'll talk to one of the founding members of the Mean Street Posse from the mean streets of Greenwich, Connecticut. Pete Gass will be our guest here on the Kevin Kelly Show. When we return, stay with us.
Placement Nation's Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes and PlacementNation.com. You can check out Scott Criscullo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with Main Event, Mission Indie Possible, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super Shows. And relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series, led by Ben Morse, and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We got sports covered too with the Sports Evolution Mega Show with Scott, Dr. G, Cowboy, and Cowboy Sr., the Kings of Sport, led by Live Audio Wrestling's godfather Nate Milton, as well as the NBA Team Podcast and the TJ McClun Show. PTBN tackles pop culture and irreverence with Richard and the Mailman, the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, and if you like a hybrid of all of this in list form, check out Jordan Duncan's Rank and File. All these shows are available on PlacetoBeNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tourneaments and more. We want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacetoBeNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
All right, we're back here on the Kevin Kelly Show. And a couple of weeks ago, we saw Shane McMahon kind of shock everybody and return to Raw and be put into a match coming up at WrestleMania against The Undertaker. It's a crazy situation. And the first thing that we said to ourselves here on the Kevin Kelly Show is, now's the time we got to talk to our pal Pete Gass. And that's why this week here on the Kevin Kelly Show, Pete Gass is our special guest. Gaspo, it's great to talk to you, man, after so much time. How are you?
Okay. No, I said things are crazy here, but it's great to talk to you again. It's been too long, really.
I moved away from Connecticut in 2004 and moved to PA and have been just trying to, like, work and do all things and kind of get back into wrestling. What have you been doing over the last few years?
Well, I after wrestling, I kind of went into I went to Wall Street for about a year or so, a little more than a year, almost like 2 years. But it was after 9/11, and as you know, the market was pretty bad. So after that, I stayed there for a while. Then they asked everyone to take a 60% pay cut. So I said, "Well, it was nice knowing you guys."
Yeah, thanks.
and I decided I was going to work closer to my home in Greenwich. And when I did that, I hooked up with a company called WB Mason. They're a great company, privately owned, and it's amazing. This company grows like weeds. You know, when I started, it was like a $200 million company. Now it's $1.5 billion. And so throughout the economy, it still manages to grow, and they treat me great, and no complaints at all other than that. And just got married about a year and a half ago.
That's right. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you. And we live in Long Island on the beach on the North Shore, and we love it. We enjoy it a lot.
Well, you're not in Greenwich anymore, but you can look to the north, and you know that it's there.
I can literally look out the window. I see it every morning.
All right. So the first thing that I said is, you know, because Justin and I were talking about having you on, and I said, oh my God, we'll book him for 2 weeks, right? And he's going to get mobbed. And has that been the case? Like, everybody and their brothers coming out of the woodwork to talk to you?
It's been amazing. I mean, like, the first, so Shane's music hits that day. And I think while Raw was on, I hit like 500 more Twitter followers. And everyone, you know, and I barely, before we'll get into the whole book thing. I'm writing a book, but we were, I'd started doing Twitter off and on, not too much, you know, a little, you know, here and there. And then now with Shane there and me with the book, the thing's just going crazy. And I mean, I'm getting everyone RollingStone.com did a story on me. Like, I would never have thought Rolling Stone. I mean, unless I killed somebody, I don't know.
Yeah, you're in a Nirvana tribute band, and there's dead hookers in the room. Then maybe we'll be in Rolling Stone. Then it would make sense. That's awesome, dude. All right. So okay. We all said, now everybody said, oh my God, there's Shane. And it immediately brought back that nostalgia with the Mean Street Posse. That was the feeling. It was, oh man, remember when the Mean Street Posse and Shane were together? It was so great. How does that make you feel?
It makes me feel incredible. It's really a special feeling to, you know, Kevin, it's been 15 years since we were, you know, on a regular basis. And, you know, I came back for the 15 year reunion, but, for, you know, a few months ago, just to take you a little, I'll sidetrack a lot. So you got to sometimes keep me right on that track. A couple months ago, some guy in San Antonio had a sign out there, with Roman Reigns. Roman Reigns came through the crowd, and right in the front row, someone said, had a sign that said Mean Street Posse equals ratings. Off big time for that. You know, I mean, and the best was Vince was looking right at it, and there's no way he missed it. So I can't wait to see him sometime soon and bring it up to him. But anyway, just to answer your question, it's amazing that after 15 years, you know, it's still getting a reaction. It's pretty damn special. You know, like for me to, you know, they say if you have a sign, that means you're over, but 15 years later, that's pretty much over too. I'm happy with that.
And this was not, you know, when, you know, the fans have seen Shane and it was an automatic reaction to nostalgia. This was somebody that just random fan just wanted to put something on poster board about you guys. So that was cool. But I would imagine, cause we were together. So I want you to tell me the story. I had my perception of you guys. I always thought it was cool. I never had a problem at all, but did some of the boys have a problem with the Mean Street Posse?
Yeah, I think, you know, I think what happened was a lot of guys were really nice to our faces and you know, cause the boss's son's friends are there, you know, and I think over time, you know, the more we were there, more people were like, all right, when are these guys going to go? So, I mean, Kevin, you know, the whole business is about respect and paying your dues, and we didn't pay our dues like everyone else. So what we did was we had to pay our dues in other ways. And, you know, we put everybody over. We had no problem doing that. There was no ego trip. We were just trying to survive. And we took beatings, you know, we took beatings from, you know, Bradshaw, and we took beatings from Test, and we took beatings, you know, you name it, right down the line. We, we got our butts kicked by everybody. And slowly, you know, slowly but surely, everyone seemed to, you know, accept us. And, you know, there were a group of guys, you know, that were always there, and they were cool with us from the beginning. They didn't feel threatened by us, you know, obviously like Road Dogg and X-Pac and guys like that, where, you know, we weren't taking DX's spot by any means. But then there were guys, you know, that were on the, you know, still just coming up, like Edge and Christian. They were great. I mean, they were so helpful, you know, to me and everyone else on the posse. And then you got guys like, Prince Albert. We were close with Val Venus. And it was funny because those guys rode with Test, and Test didn't like, you could tell Test didn't like us at first.
Right.
And then as time went on, you know, once we did that, that Greenwich Street Fight, the Lover or Lever match, that's when we all started to become close, and we became very close right after that. I think he realized that, you know, we did something real special for him and put him over. And, you know, that storyline that lasted, it lasted a few months, you know, and it really kind of helped his career at the time. So I appreciated it.
And I know you guys worked incredibly hard, and we'll talk about what you did in Memphis down the road and how everything kind of continued on. But there was, I couldn't remember if the television audience ever saw him, but I seem to remember that in one of those Shane training videos that there was another member. Now, of course, the Mean Street Posse was Pete Gass, Rodney, and what we saw on television, Joey Abs. But wasn't there another guy, another friend?
Yes.
That was the Mean Street Posse. What was his name? Because that's been bugging me for years. I couldn't remember.
It was Willie Green.
Damn it, it was Willie. I knew it was Willie.
And when you get to WrestleMania, it turned out to be there were two other guys. There's Billy P, which was Billy Pirro. And then another guy, Chris Sahowitz. And that was Shane's college roommate, who was very close with all of us. And yeah, that group together knew how to drink a bunch of beers and get a little rowdy. So, but we had a good time. And then I guess what happened was, you know, after that WrestleMania with Shane and X-Pac, I guess the writers, Vince Russo, or you know, Vince is taking credit for it, so I'll give Vince the credit. And you know, he was a huge part of our staying ability there. But he told us that you know, they wanted us back. They saw something in us, and they only asked Rodney and I back. And then, you know, we needed someone that could work. So that's when they, you know, Jason Arndt, who played Joey Abs. Joey Abs was actually the name of a friend of ours, Joey Abazia. And we got to, that's how he got that name. And we all, the three of us clicked pretty soon, like immediately clicked. He was definitely one of us from the start.
And of course he was an Omega guy. He was a Hardy guy.
Yep.
And it was his way in, I would imagine. And he was just a cool cat, so it was never a problem. But if there was ever anybody, and I remember asking him, like, sure, you don't mind doing this? And he was like, no, it's, you know, it's, I think it's great, you know, because here was a guy that had all the tools, and, you know, in a lot of people's opinion, me and Cornette especially. And we were trying to figure out ways to get him to crack the roster, and this is the way that it got done. It was the most unconventional way that there could be. And here he was, kind of help teach you guys the ropes and do most of the heavy lifting while you guys learned, you'll learned enough of the craft to be able to handle it on your own. But yeah, he was always cool with it.
Well, I don't know if you know the whole story, but Steve Bradley, who passed away a few years ago, he was actually supposed to be a member of the Mean Street Posse. He was supposed to be that Joey Abs role. And when they were getting ready to call him up, he had mono, and he missed his calling. Joey Abs, believe it or not, and I got this confirmed a couple weeks ago when I was out to dinner with Tommy Dreamer. Joey Abs, or Jason, was supposed to be Rhino, and he had a, Tommy Dreamer loved Jason. He said he was, you know, he had it every, and he did. I mean, you remember.
Yep.
He's big. He can move. He can work. And, you know, he had all these dreams, and Jason got the call from WWF at the time and said, you know, he wanted to be there. He wanted to be in the show. So Well, we'll see what happens. Yeah, that's basically what he said to, you know, and he came to us, and that was great.
That's fantastic. See how all these roads, you know, there's so many intersections and what could have been. And now, okay, so who told you, who said something to you first about, hey, they want to have you guys actually wrestle? And what was your reaction?
Let's see. That was actually Shane that said it. And my first reaction, you know, we would do anything for that kid, you know, and that's in the McMahon family. You know, I'd run through a burning building for all, any one of them.
Don't shush. They'll listen and they're going to come up with ideas. And we don't want that to happen.
I know, right? I've lost a step or two in the last 15 years, so it probably wouldn't be a good idea. But I still would, to be honest. And, you know, he had asked, and we would have done anything for him. We were all for it. We just didn't know how we were going to go doing it. And that's what happened. Rodney and I, you know, we didn't know how to take bumps. And we threw our bodies around and just made it look as natural as possible. And that was basically it. So that's all, you know. My reaction at first was, how the hell are we going to do this? And then after that, it was like, let's just do it. And that's what we did. We threw ourselves around.
So you're working on a book, and we talked earlier today. It's how far along are you, and how long and until we'll see the finished copy, and what is it going to be like? Recipes, poetry,
cookbook, Cooking with Gas,
Cooking with Gas, baby. That's how we do it.
That may be the next book. Right. This one's about this one's a fun book. Bradshaw did my forward. Which says a lot about the respect that I ended up earning from him. But he said it's a great book. He said he really enjoyed it. I thought we were done with the book, and then we pitched it to publishing companies, and the publishing company Skyworks out of New York City, they decided that they were going to they needed it longer. They wanted more stuff. They loved it. They're excited about it, and they just want to be able to put more stories in. So it's a lot of stories about how things started, meeting Shane and Rodney, and then going on to high school, being together from there, going on, you know, the majority of it is from wrestling days and fun stories on the road and what happened and what was going on. And you know, right up to the end, you know, right up to the goodbye. You know, the hardest part about the business is when you have to say goodbye to it. And that's all in there. So it'll be a fun read. Like I said, everyone that's read it so far has loved it. And I'm looking forward to the opportunity of it's supposed to launch in March, a year from now, March of 2017. Our deadline, I have a co-writer and I are doing it. And he's actually done a bunch of WWE books. He has a book coming out pretty soon, the NXT book he just did. We're having that. That's going to launch 2017, and we can't wait. We're excited.
That's fantastic. Are you going – this is the question that I have to ask. Is there any plans for at least a partial or maybe a complete Mean Street Posse reunion coming up in Dallas for WrestleMania?
Kev, two things. If there was, which there, believe me, there's not. I couldn't say it anyway. But
I know.
But there truly is not anything planned. So,
okay.
And you know how the business is. They could call me the day before and say, hey, you know, we came up with an idea. But as far as that, there's there's no plan of having the Mean Street Posse at WrestleMania.
All right. Not as of yet, but okay. Very good. Appreciate the honesty, because this is a match to me that needs tons of smoke and mirrors, and smoke and mirrors for the smoke and mirrors. So how much layer can we put on this deal? And here we go. Do you think Shane is now? Listen, you guys, we're all older now, and I never had much of a fastball. At least you guys were good athletes. Does Shane still have it? Does he still have what it takes to be able to do the kind of match that he wants to do in his head?
I can guarantee you, Kev, he does, and I guarantee you when this show's completed at 11 o'clock, 10 after 11, you're going to say to yourself, Shane did it again, and he stole the show. you know, a lot of people are doubting him. I'm seeing these stories that the match is, you know, it's two guys that are old. There's two, you know, Shane's crazy. You know that firsthand.
Yes.
And the one thing I could say about Shane is, you know, he was born and bred for this business, and you know now it's a chance for him and his to perform in front of his sons, and it's a special moment for him. And you know, every match, like I dare anybody out there that's listening to the show to just come up with one match with Shane involved and where you said, oh, that match sucked. You cannot name a match that, I mean, I can't. Can
no.
you?
No.
I'm saying.
And we would always go in with, and it was the type of thing that where me sitting back there, I would always, I'd hate it because I knew that there was going to be something crazy. And I was always very worried. And I was always very worried about you guys because you were always involved. And everything just, it always seemed to work out. And that's what I mean. Like, you guys were athletes and very, very athletic. I know he's working very hard. So, that's always the thing. That's the thing that nobody talks about. It's not just like he puts down the, you know, sets down the computer, gets up from the desk and takes off the suit and does this. He works out, and you guys all worked out a ton to right. be able to do what you did. That was a real transformation for you. If I remember correctly, like you had gotten, you know, like you really transformed your body once you got this assignment now with WWE. Tell me about that a little bit.
Well, you know, it's funny you brought that up because I cringe every time I see those opening vignettes, that Rodney and I did in the beginning, because I was every bit of I was a few fries short of 300 pounds. You know?
You had those chubby cheeks. Oh, we love the gas.
Those cheeks were stuffed with cheeseburgers, you know. You know, I just popped one in. But no, seriously, I had a different mentality as far as working out. I didn't do any cardio. What cardio I did was very little, a little bit on the bike, and that was it. And you know, I was an offensive lineman, and I still had that mentality. And you know, I was strong, but I didn't have any. You know, I wasn't looking to sculpt myself at the time, or I didn't know how to sculpt myself at the time. Everything was about getting bigger and being a big run blocker and, you know, protecting my quarterback's butt. But so then we get into wrestling, and then all of a sudden, you know, you start picking up tips here and there on how to lose weight and stuff. And, you know, you're not hitting the ice cream bar and, you know, at catering, and, you know, you're eating well. And on the road, you know, after you leave an arena, you're eating better. And all of a sudden, you know, things started to click. And, you know, I went from about easily 290, 295 when I first started. By the time I got cut, I was down to 242, and it was a big difference. And I was felt good, could move really well. I was happy with it. So we'll see.
How I know you guys always had a smile on your face down in Memphis, but I know it wasn't easy.
Oh no, because first of all, we had William Regal teaching us at one point, and he's stiff as hell. And then you know you had young guys that came in, and it was Daniel Bryan and Spanky. I remember Spanky.
Oh yeah,
Cade, and you know those guys were trying to make a name for themselves. And you know, then we had we were still trying to learn. And you know, we were constantly, you know, it wasn't like we got off TVs and we got a vacation. It was right back to work, and we were wrestling. God, you know, we were doing Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday with WWF at the time. And then coming home every Wednesday would be at Old Miss. We would do a show there. Then Thursday we had a train in the ring. Every once in a while we'd get a break and we'd get to watch films or something and ice ourselves up. If we took a big, big ass whipping that the few days prior. And then Friday night we'd do a show, and then Saturday morning would be live for, Jerry Lawler's show, Power Pro Wrestling. And then we would do something Saturday night. And then, you know, so we almost didn't have any time off, to be honest with you.
Right.
But it was worth it. I would do it all over again in a heartbeat. And, you know, all the aches and pains I have nowadays, it's all worth it. But, hey, I want to ask you a question.
Yes.
Do you remember when I got in trouble in Memphis?
do I remember when you got in trouble in Memphis?
Do you remember the limo story? Do you remember the cuisine?
No.
If you don't, I'll tell it again.
All right, I want to hear it.
We were doing a loop. It was a big loop too from Memphis where we had to go down to Louisiana. We had to go through Mississippi, Alabama, and then back up to Memphis. And you know, I had a leased car at the time, and Abs had a pickup truck, and we were at a bar one night, and some guy came up and introduced himself and said he had a limo company, and he said he goes, do you want to use one of my limos? I'll drive you to these shows, because we were telling him about the shows we had to do. So he got us a Navigator limo, and we piled about 8 or 9 guys into the limo, and we end up pulling up. Our first show was in some kind of mall parking lot or something. And the ring was set up and everything. And we pull up and, you know, the doors open up and there's beer cans falling out of it. And all sorts
of stuff. God, I do remember this now.
because you and I talked, and I remember, you know, you were like, where did you get that or something? I was like, you could have came. I was like, I wasn't trying to disrespect the business, but when I went to TVs the following, I had 2 weeks of being called into the office, getting yelled at. They said that I wasn't respecting the business, and you know, those are for paying your dues. And I learned that one the hard way, but I really didn't mean anything by it. And it wasn't like, Abs and I were doing, we weren't trying to show up to anybody or do anything. The guy said, he goes, you want a ride, and he didn't even charge us. So,
That's the business. I love that type of stuff because, again, if you could find somebody, and again, these loops that you guys did was every week. It was for a Memphis Championship Wrestling. You never ran in Memphis. That was the joke.
Yeah,
and it would be like we have to drive to like West Memphis, Arkansas, out to Pascagoula, or what was the other one? There were shows in Mississippi, there were shows in Louisiana, shows everywhere. Never in Memphis.
Memphis. The only time we were in Memphis was if we did the New Daisy Theater on Beale Street.
Yep.
Or if we did Power Pro Wrestling. But we were never in Memphis other than that. It was either Beale Street or in the studio at the television network on live television on that Saturday morning. Otherwise, you were all over that area. And,
I was back, by the way, in Minneapolis a few months ago for Ring of Honor. And I remember the time that we were up there for SummerSlam, and you, me, Rodney, and Abs went to the Mall of America.
Yeah.
And we just walked around for hours and just ate, did shit, hung out. That was like one of the best times. And I remember that like vividly, like it was yesterday. So, and that was 1999. We're getting old.
I'm not allowed to curse, right?
You say whatever you want.
All right. So just to put a cap on that story. So, we're in Los Angeles, and it was one of those 2 weeks where I was getting my ass chewed. And, I remember coming out of the office and Road Dogg saw me. Road Dogg's a clown as it is. So I said, we're walking down the hall, and we eventually make it into the locker room. And he goes, okay. He goes, what'd they say to you? And I said, I was taking heat for, the guy has a limo business. You know, he's a wrestling fan and just being a nice guy. And he said, he just wanted to give us a ride in a limo, and he goes, what'd he charge you? I said, he didn't charge me anything. I said, just being a nice guy. He goes, he said, you tell the office to suck my dick. He goes, you give me that number. He goes, I'll use that motherfucker. I swear. Sure enough, the next time TVs were in Memphis, that guy was driving Road Dogg around. Him and Baca.
I never knew you got in trouble for that. And that to me is the craziest thing, because I remember Road Dogg with that guy. The next time that we were there, it wasn't too much longer after that.
Right. And the funny thing about it was I think Terry Golden wasn't too happy with that situation, because he was driving around in a pickup truck or whatever he was. And then we pull up, like I said, we pull up in a Navigator stretch limo, 8 of us, and beer cans are falling out. And who's laughing and joking around and spitting tobacco or whatever they're doing. And, it was like I guess it wasn't supposed to be fun. You know, we try to always make the most of it. That's why you said before, like, we were always smiling. We loved what we did, and, you know, we enjoyed it, and we tried to take, you know, the glass was always half full for me. It was never half empty.
So, so you were growing up, you know, kind of running in and out of the McMahon house.
Yeah.
Give me a story. There's got to be a story or something you could share about. Did you ever run afoul with, did you ever see the mean Vince McMahon that we saw on television or what? How did that treat you? How did you make it through any of those situations?
Yeah. I always tell this one story where, Shane was not allowed to ride. We had a buddy of ours. He ended up moving away, which hurt our chances for football. This kid was big. This kid, Mike Kate, he was out of North Carolina, and his family was in, you know, his father had get transferred or whatever the reason was. And, he had a motorcycle, and, you know, Shane wanted to ride that motorcycle, and Vince always said, you know, you're not allowed to ride the motorcycle. So dumbass decides that he goes, let's go down the street. So we all go down the street, and Shane jumps on that bike, and he's riding, you know, riding around the road in Conyers Farm, which is, you have to own at least five acres to have property in where Vince lives. So he's riding around the road. All of a sudden, you know, we look down the driveway, and here comes Vince. And it seems like, you know, that walk he has when he comes to the it kind of seemed like that walk was there back then. I just keep seeing that. So he was walking down and, you know, he asked us, he goes, where's Shane? And none of us would stooge. We just kind of all looked at each other and didn't say anything. But then we didn't need to say anything because dumbass comes riding around the corner and he's got, and you could see Vince just turned red. And he says, he just politely, like, he caught his breath for a second. And he says, boys, it's time to go home. And we said, yes, Vince, we got in our cars and started to leave. And you could tell Vince, he was going to take a beating. And we were all laughing because that's what we all did. When someone got in trouble or got hurt, we all laughed. And that was that was the situation. But that one day, it wasn't a good one for Shane, for sure.
Jesus. Well, hey, listen, I know that the book is still in progress.
Yep.
And it's being tweaked and finalized. But when the time is right, we want to have you back on, and we'll promote the book. We'll maybe give some copies away to some great listeners here of the podcast, and we'll have you back on to tell more stories about you, about Rodney, about Shane, about your relationship, your friendship, how the Mean Street Posse came to be, and where they are today. And I just want to say thanks. Thanks for always being so cool with me and so easy to work with. I've always appreciated our friendship, and I'm grateful we were able to reconnect here.
Yeah, Kevin, that feeling's mutual, man. You've always treated us, you know, with respect, and you know, we were no one coming in, like we talked about Vince. You know, Vince basically just threw two guys in the ring with athletic ability but no experience, and you know, a lot of guys didn't accept that, and you did, and you always treated us with respect, and I appreciate that, and thank you for having me on, but you know, you guys, and I'll come on anytime.
All right.
You guys want me, you know, and like I said, hopefully, you know, there's nothing going on so far, but you know, if Shane calls, I'll be my bags will be packed within 5 minutes, and I'll be heading out the door, but I don't know if that's going to happen. I don't think so. But, you know, he did a lot of matches after we left and held his own and had things going on. So I think that's going to be one of those deals. But it'd be great to go back just one more time. But we'll see.
We'll
anyway,
see.
Thank you again for everything. And hopefully I'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, hopefully we'll be seeing you. But I know everybody's going to be watching Shane versus The Undertaker at WrestleMania. That's going to be fantastic. Pete Gass has been our guest here on the Kevin Kelly Show. We will take a quick timeout, and we'll be back with the one and only Cheeseburger from Ring of Honor. So stay with us. Rolling in hella deep, headed to the mezzanine, dressed in all pink, set my gator shoes, those are green, drink thin a leopard mink, girl standing next to me, probably should have washed this, smells like R. Kelly sheet.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network. where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
All right, we're back on the Kevin Kelly Show. Everybody listening, whether on iTunes, Stitcher, or directly on the PlaceToBeNation.com website, a lot of people have been asking me over the months and months since he first, really hit the scene hard and is really starting to take off. Tell me the story about the young phenom of Ring of Honor. And so we're going to let him tell that story tonight. He's Cheeseburger. He's our guest here on the Kevin Kelly Show. Burger, what's up, my man? How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. How are you, Kevin?
I'm great. You are, Bob and I were out doing a camp this weekend in Denver, and we were talking about the hardworking people behind the scenes of Ring of Honor and the school, the dojo, and how you and Will have really stepped up and taken leadership positions within the company. I want to start by saying thank you for all your hard work and everything that you've done. But how did you find yourself at the ROH dojo? How did that situation come to be? Where did the idea of you wanting to wrestle come from?
During my high school years, I took like a long hiatus of watching wrestling. So I think from 06 to like the end of 09, I missed like the entire era. So it's like all that, the new ECW and all that, that stuff that happened. But, in my junior year of high school, I remember like just catching, catching Raw, the final Raw of, 09. And watching it, and I just remembered my love of wrestling. So from that point on, like that 2010 on, I was completely engrossed in like relearning like everything I had missed in like wrestling. And over the months, I just realized that I had always wanted to be a wrestler. I just never knew it, even as a kid. Like I would always wrestle around with my friends, but I never, like, the concept of being a wrestler wasn't really something that I thought about. And then when I started getting in the Ring of Honor more, I found out they had a training school. That's when it kind of clicked for me. Like, maybe I should, this might be something I should start pursuing.
And obviously, did you voice this to your friends, to your family? It wasn't like you went on a crash diet before you decided to start in wrestling. You were always a slightly built guy. So I would imagine people had some probably different points of view or different opinions about you getting into wrestling. Is that true?
Yeah, I didn't tell my friends at school. They didn't find out until like after I already started training. I did tell my mom, and she's completely supportive. She was confused by it at first, but after some time, she warmed up to it. She actually, her and my stepdad at the time, I went to check out the Ring of Honor school, I believe June or July of 2010. And the funny story is my stepdad, he goes up to Delirious, and Delirious says he always gets questions about, like, say from, like, student's parents about, like, oh, whatever happened to, like, this wrestling, like, or whatever happened to Dusty Rhodes or something. And my stepdad goes up to him and says, hey, man, whatever happened to Ox Baker? Like completely out of the blue. Like, he brings up Ox Baker. Not like where we have the Bret Hart or Dusty Rhodes, where we have the Ox Baker. So I thought that was very funny.
That is funny. And of course, I think I've told the story on television about the nickname and cheeseburger and how that came to be. So is the story accurate that it was just attributed to you during training that somebody saw you and said you need to start eating some cheeseburgers, or how did it really come about?
It all right. So two people debate back and forth about who actually created it. So the first weekend, I believe, that I went and helped out at Ring of Honor show, it was the last HD net tapings they had at the arena, and Red Titus will take credit for it, but also the former Ring of Honor head security, Zach Yeager, he'll also take credit for it. They both debate back and forth about who actually saw me and came up with the that boy needs to eat some cheeseburgers line.
That's great. And of course it has stuck, and along the way there have been some unique looks. One of the first times I met you was in Atlanta for that weekend of shows, and you were wearing a Shawn Michaels look style cowboy hat the whole time. How did that come to be? What happened there? Why were you wearing a cowboy hat?
For some reason, Dutch Mantel was at that Atlanta show. He had like a merch fan stuff selling like some Dutch Mantel cowboy hats. I don't really know why. He had some kind of merch table set up selling cowboy hats. And the security guard just mentioned Zach. He bought me the hat, and he gives me the hat and says, "This is your hat now. Every show, like, I want you wearing this hat. Don't let me catch you out and all." So I've been being a few months in that time. I was like, "All right, yes, sir." I put the hat on. I would wear it like every time I did ring crew, I would wear that hat.
And I remember, of course, in that bloody brawl between the Briscoes and A&X, I think it was, right? Gorilla pressed by Jay with the cowboy hat on as he threw you onto about 10 people.
Yeah, it was like my unofficial debut getting gorilla pressed by Jay Briscoe at the Atlanta show.
Now, did you tell your mom and dad, your mom and your stepdad, did you tell them what you were doing? Did they see you? Did they say, "This is crazy, this has got to stop, not my baby boy"?
No, I never kept my mom like up to date on what was going on, just because I knew she's like, not that I was getting hurt or anything, but just knew that she'd like worry about me and my safety. But like, I kept her in the dark about like most of like the stuff that was going on, about like with the shows or like my training, like pretty much up until like my first match.
It's probably for the best, because my mom is 80, I'm 48, and she still worries about me. So I think that's part of the deal. Now, you also hit a couple of, it hasn't been all smooth sailing, rocket ship ride to the top. You had a pretty serious shoulder injury.
Yes.
Tell me about what happened, and was there some concern that was kind of the end of the road for you?
I was doing a training seminar with Chikara, I think, in like December of, I skipped the year. I went December of 2013, end of 2013. And we were just doing various like lucha type drills, and during one of the drills, like, I had my shoulder like popped out, and I didn't realize at the time. I didn't know what that feeling was, but like my shoulder popped out, and like I managed to like pop it back into place. I was like, "Oh, that was really weird. I guess I'm just gonna ignore that. Let me just see how this feels." And then like I had a handful of matches after that where I'd be in the middle of the match and my shoulder would pop out during the match. And after a certain point, I finally told my mom about it, and she was like, "Yeah, you should probably get this checked out." So when I got checked out, it turns out I had a torn labrum. And when I got the surgery, I was out for about 3.5 months, I believe. The doctor I had was actually really, really good. He had done that kind of surgery before. His last name is actually DiBiase, if you can believe that.
That's so cool. So there's even at least from a name perspective, there's a wrestling connection with you. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, he did surgery, and it came out pretty good. Right now, I feel pretty good, and I haven't really had many problems with it for the since.
And now, okay, so obviously you weigh – what do you weigh for real?
Last time I weighed myself, I think I was like 121,
Okay. So I've always said 125, which is not far off. That's a pretty good guess on my part. Have you worked to try to add size, or is it just not going to happen?
I haven't worked in the eating portion. That's the hardest part for me. But like working out isn't that big of an issue, because I do work out like every like two or three times a week at the school, but not really for size, more for just being a better base and being able to protect my opponent more, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, and you are, you're in shape. I've never seen you get blown up. I've never seen you really get tired. So you're obviously in shape, but I've heard that one of the mainstays of your diet is Skittles. Is that true?
Who told you that, Will?
Well, I'm not gonna tell stories. I'm not gonna give up my sources. Give me a break.
I'll tell you about my love for Skittles. So I do love Skittles, but I have a couple of stipulations with Skittles. So I only eat the original red pack, first of all, and I don't eat the red and the gray Skittles.
Really?
No, not at all. When Will like first started coming around, like I had a bag of Skittles and I ate them. I finished up and I was like, hey, do you want the rest of these? He's like, yeah, sure. So I give him the pack of Skittles and he opens it up and there's just like, he's like, why are there only the red and the grape ones left in here?
So I don't like them. That's funny.
No, they're gross.
And they're gross. Listen, just, I mean, you've got to take risks though. You've got to try new stuff.
I forget the name of them. They have like a new brand of Skittles out. It's like the garden flavor or something. They have like weird flavors like red apple and like peach. So like the orchard Skittles, that's what they're called. I tried those and those are all right.
Yeah.
I'll stick with the original.
So obviously, you got to go to Japan, which was an unbelievable experience. I was there. I was so happy to be able to, see you experience that. Was that a surprise? Did you know that was in the works all along? Take me through that and tell me that story.
I found out last October, I believe, that I was contacted by the Ring of Honor office, and they told me about New Japan sent out a list of people they wanted for the Tokyo Dome show, and I was one of the guys on the list. And after they told me, I kind of stopped talking on the phone and just sat there and like stunned silent there, like, hey, are you still with us? Did you pass out? I was completely shocked, and then I was surprised that I was really surprised I managed to meet my entry into the pre-show Battle Royale managed to be a secret for so long, because when I came out, like, I got so many messages, like, wow, like, who, like, cheeseburgers here, even from, like, Japanese fans, like, oh, who's this cheeseburger guy that disappeared?
Now, all right, so you're in there, and the Rumble style, so, of course, the first two was it Liger and Tiger Mask, and then Fujiwara?
Liger and Fujiwara, and then Tiger Mask came out to help Liger like battle Fujiwara.
That's right. And then the number four entry was Cheeseburger. I lost my mind, bro, when I saw you in there and I saw the list of names, so I knew it was gone. I couldn't believe it.
I remember seeing the list of like the order of entry. I was like, all right, maybe I'll be like in the middle or something like that. Or but then it's like I'm right at the beginning. I'm like, what? Like, this is insane. And then I was in there for like, I think like 25 minutes or something like that. I didn't realize I was in for that long, like in the heat of the moment.
I mean, you were giving the business to everybody in there. You were letting everybody have it. It was great. Nagata. That was fantastic.
I even got to pin the hero say, though.
See, that's what you get. That's now, and you and I have talked a lot, and I want to thank you also for, helping me along the way with announcing for New Japan, because it was a great benefit, and just, kind of like I knew where I needed to be after I had done the first show. It was like I really didn't know what I needed to know until I knew I didn't know it. So let's get a different level of prepared for Wrestle Kingdom, and now I'm good. Now I'm all set. But because I was never like a huge fan of it. I didn't have access to it on television. I wasn't a tape trader. By the time, you know, it really took off and it was tape trading was popular, I was working.
Yeah.
I was in the industry.
You're kind of past that point of fandom.
Yeah. So was that something that you were a fan of? You said you were a fan of Raw, watched every week, but was that a product you were into as well?
I didn't get into Japanese wrestling until I knew of it when, like, before I took that hiatus that I spoke of earlier, but, like, I didn't really get heavily back into it until, like, after 2010 when I started getting, like, really deep into, like, my wrestling fandom. But, like, on the side note, like, that whole tape trading era, I kind of, like, when I started getting into wrestling, I think I started becoming a fan, like, maybe 2000, 2001, and at that point, tape trading, I think it was kind of like losing its appeal a little bit, so I kind of like missed that era by just a few years. But I really started getting in like the era of YouTube in like 2010 and all that, and the internet. That's what really helped me like propel myself into that full on like Japanese fandom.
And what was who were your favorites from any era? Who's the guys that always stand out?
My two of my favorite Japanese wrestlers, of course, Liger is always number one, and then Great Muda is a close second at number two. You actually have a Rob Schamberger, a Great Muda painting hanging on my wall. But I loved a lot of the FNW stuff with Hayabusa just recently passed.
Yeah, that was sad, huh?
Yeah, that came out of nowhere. That was really it really hit me hard just because I'm such a big fan of him. A couple of other favorites. I love the New Japan UWF, UWFU, which is kind of like, if you're unfamiliar with it, was like UWF was a kind of like a shoot fighting promotion with run by a guy named Takada. And they had like this kind of like a WCW versus WWE kind of thing where like the invasion angle, I should say, where these shoot fighters were invading New Japan. And they had like this big money like you were, they drew like huge numbers at the Tokyo Dome for their main events, which were Muda and a lot of times Takada, who was the head invader, was the guy they were trying to get the belt back from. So I'm a big fan of that era of New Japan as well.
Now Maeda got fired for kicking off Fujinami's face, right? Didn't he kick him kicked him in the eye or something like that, and his whole face exploded.
Yeah, he like broke his orbital bone with like a shoot kick, I believe.
Yeah, so you can't do that. And then now because there were a couple of different invasion angles, and there was the one group that legit got fired. Then they went and started the UWF, and then that group came back, but there was still a lot of bitter feelings when they came back, right? Because
I think like these guys like left and now they're coming back and they're like they're trying to take over in storyline, but they are also like actually taking over. So I think there's kind of maybe a little bit of a realism to that and to it in that sense.
What is and of course of the current crop of guys in New Japan, we know that Liger is still there and is still going strong. He's truly amazing. But how about the current stars of today? Is, you know, what about like Naito? What about Goto? We know Tanahashi and Okada are awesome and incredible, but just that step below, Shibata, Goto, Naito, where do those guys stand with you?
I'm a big fan of Naito's, his like recent work with I always forget the name, Ingobernables.
Ingobernables.
I'm a big fan of like that work he's been doing, especially like with him, like the transformation of Watanabe as evil, and like the transformation of Bushi as like kind of like his right hand man. Like I'm really liking the stuff that group's doing. Like I could see Naito being like doing like some big things like in the coming future. I love Shibata, his work. He's like he's a guy I really want to see come to the States at some point and like mix it up with the Ring of Honor guys.
Yeah, that would be a dream. And of course, we got to see Hirooki Goto along with Okada and Tanahashi and Kushida this past weekend when we were in Vegas a week ago. But we returned to Philly now. Kushida, I know he's your boy and all. He's your buddy. You've been on his show. When is Kushida Cheeseburger? When are we booking this? What do we got to do to make this happen?
I don't know. Are you talking about as a team or one on one?
I'm talking about one on one. What's he afraid of?
I welcome the challenge. I need a maybe I'll he's challenging ACH. ACH taking him on for the junior title. Maybe I might throw my hat into the Super J Cup that's coming up in a few months.
What do you think about that?
I'm really excited for that.
I already put a bug in Delirious's ear. I'm like, you need to be a part of this, bro. But I think this is going to be, and of course, this past week, New Japan, part of the start of the 44th year, they kind of do this every year. And they announce contract signings with Michael Elgin and Shibata. And then they announce the Super J Cup coming back, which is a big deal. Part of the history of the company. And so fans should go back and do some research. And it's going to be a big thing because it's going to be guys from like 7 or 8 different promotions all under. And Ring of Honor is one of them. Yeah. So Berger could be there.
One other thing about the Super J Cup that I like that like people because I'm a big fan of wrestling tournaments, especially like single elimination ones, because I love Best of the Super Juniors, which is a round robin style, but I prefer single. I feel like the matches in like the single elimination tournament, like Super J Cup or King of the Ring, I feel like they have more weight to them because it's like if you lose, you're out, as opposed to like a round robin where if you take a loss, you don't gain some points. So it's not as big of a deal, but like a tournament like Super J Cup, I feel like every match has that like sense of importance to it, which I think helps like give the tournament like a big match feel.
It's a and again, the tournament format, I think this year, it's got to be different, I think, than G1, just because we don't want to have two tournaments so close together and have similar formats. So I'm sure it'll be something like that. But guys from outside, how familiar are you? It's not something I'm too familiar with. I'm going to have to do some studying and some research. How familiar are you with a lot of the other promotions that are going to be involved in this?
I'm a big fan of Dragon Gate, which will I'm not sure who, but they'll have a couple of Dragon Gate guys in it. Dragon Gate is it's probably I believe it's the number two like promotion in Japan right now. Just they've managed to kind of like sneak like they people aren't really talking about them because New Japan's so big and there's such a big gap, but like they've kind of managed to like buy their time and like kind of like slide into that like number two role, especially with like the fall of like All Japan and like Noah kind of being down a little bit. But there are like a bunch of guys that I love to see from Dragon Gate like mix it up with the New Japan guys.
Well, we look forward to seeing that. Now Saturday, while it'd be nice for you to maybe throw your hat in the ring for a future challenge to Kushida or maybe, you know, who knows what, but this Saturday you are going to be in six-man tag team action. You've got two amazing partners, but you're taking on three absolute monsters.
Yeah, Moose Machine.
That's right, because it's going to be Cheeseburger and them boys, the Briscoes, in six-man tag team action against the Ring of Honor World Tag Team Champions War Machine and Moose.
Yep. So that's going to be I don't even know what to think about that, man.
Come on, dude. You're going to be in there with all these monsters. There's two ways it goes. It's going to be showtays for everyone, including Stokely, right? or we bring back the Dutch Mantel gimmick hat. We put it on you, and Jay Briscoe launches you again. Gorilla press slam over his head.
I aside though, I still have that cowboy hat. I thought about passing it down to the Outlaw, but he has a much nicer hat now. But when he first started doing the Outlaw gimmick, I thought about passing it down to the hat.
I think it has to happen. I don't care what kind of hat he's wearing; it's no match for that hat. That chance to go back and just—I think that show is up on ROHWrestling.com. If not, just find the DVD somewhere. And just look for the scene. It was day two, so it was the second show. And Jay Briscoe has a very young cowboy hat wearing cheeseburger above his head and throws him as far as he possibly can, landing on top of a whole crew of people. And I think after you fell, you very quickly put the hat back on, which to this day still cracks me up. Hey, so we got we're going to make an announcement. I don't want to tell when, but we're going to be doing another tryout camp here really soon. It's actually going to be in the month of April. What do you think about this whole thing? What do you think about the dojo? Which this is your home now. So talk to me. Mm-hmm. Talk to me about the tryout camps and the dojo and everything that's going on.
I love the tryout camp weekend so much. Like there's just so much. I'll not describe it for people that haven't been there, but like the amount of like positivity that comes out of those camps is insane. Like you have all these trainers and all they want is to see these guys that come in and like they want to learn and they want their spot in Ring of Honor, but there's such a great group of trainers that are so willing to just help these guys along and like just give them critiques and help them get better. And I always leave those weekends feeling good. Like and I feel like I've learned so much and I've made like new friends, new connections, and I get to see these guys. Like it's always such a good feeling to me when I see someone from like a trial camp like that comes, like helps out, and like that they good, like they get that dark match, they get that television opportunity.
It's been wonderful to see not just you and Will. Like I tell the stories all the time. Will Ferrara came to the tryout camp and the first time, and he was kind of really rough around the edges and wasn't sure if he was going to make it. Came again, you know, came to two or three. And then the next time, after doing a few of these camps, now he's starting to get it. I walk into Dearborn, Michigan, of all places, and he's the first person I see. I'm like, what the hell are you doing here? And basically what he was doing, he was paying his dues on the ring crew. He was working along with you guys. So that's an amazing. It's different than New Japan with the Young Lions, but it's our own little training system that we have. And I just think it's cool the way you guys all do it.
Do you remember at that Dearborn show, we actually had because we had some time to kill. We haven't done this. I don't think we've done this since that Dearborn show, but we had like a pre-show. We're like,
oh, the pre-show. Matches. I loved it.
That was a lot of fun. We need to do that again.
Yeah, we'll bring back the. We got to bring back the pre-show. But again, there's so many guys out there that are killing for opportunities now, bro. It's amazing. Who are some of the guys on the scene that are catching your eye that we should be looking out for?
You put me on the spot here. I'm not going to forget some guys. My good friend, Anthony Green, I just talked to him. I haven't seen him in a while. He's a guy I really like a lot. Like, I would like to see, I actually got to wrestle with him in the pre-show a while back, and there's some kind of like goofy charisma about him that I really like a lot. I'd like to see him like find a spot in the Ring of Honor somehow. Another guy, I really like watching, and I really have a lot of fun with Cauliflower Chase Brown. I love everything about Chase Brown, like the guitar, the coming out with the cauliflower, like his hair, like just everything about Chase Brown. Like it's weird, but like it kind of draws, like it really catches your eye in a way.
He's out of his mind.
He's crazy. I love that.
I do it. All right. Have we ever had, I know you guys have wrestled each other for hundreds and thousands of hours in the training school. Is there ever a time that we could see Delirious versus Cheeseburger?
There's one match on YouTube that happened near the end of 2013. Actually, it's probably like a week or two like before I hurt my shoulder, I believe. But like we had this match from up in Easton, PA. If you look up Cheeseburger versus Delirious, you can find it. And we had this 12-minute match for a small promotion up in Easton, PA. But I'm hoping to do it again really soon, or tag up at some point.
Yeah, I think that would be That would be the right way to go. I would love to see that. You know, that student versus teacher thing. It's totally great. And is that the reason why the green and the black is on your wrestling outfit?
Yeah, yeah. That's the new green and black is kind of a tribute to him. I actually got like a if we ever tag like just in, as a side note, if I ever like tag with like say Delirious or Liger, I actually bought an entrance mask that I had made up that I'm keeping like a big surprise for like a big match.
That's amazing. We have to do this now. All right, so we got to talk to Ghetto. We got to talk to Ghetto Son, and we got to make this happen. All right, so you're Chris Jericho's favorite wrestler. Where does Chris Jericho fit on the cheeseburger scale? Who's your favorite wrestler?
Jericho, he's on the list as my favorite wrestler. Like number one and number two are always like Liger's number one always, and Great Muda's number two always. And then like after that, the list usually changes like based on who like I've watched most recently.
Like I imagine Ox Baker is probably up there because he must have been a mainstay in your house growing up.
Ox Baker's around top 50, I would say.
There you go. He's in top 50. So okay, now you start with the t-shirts, the cheeseburger shirt, and how? I mean, what if we sold two or three? Nobody's buying it, right?
Yeah, only a handful.
It's sold out, hasn't it?
They only have like I went to the warehouse and the ROH warehouse recently. They only have like a handful left of like the last shipment. But like in Las Vegas, Yoshitatsu came up to me, actually asked me for one of my shirts. So I go to the merch stand, I'm like, hey, can I give my friend Yoshi here a shirt? And they're like, oh, actually they're sold out. I'm like, oh, all right, maybe next time, Yoshi.
Sorry, Yoshitatsu, no t-shirt for you.
I'll get you one next time.
Dude, that's incredible. Do you realize how incredible this is? And that's the best part. I know you realize how incredible this is. Because I know how humble you are and how awesome you are. And that's one of the reasons why I wanted to have you on this show, is just to kind of like have you on and tell everybody how great you are with you here so that you hear it from me. I think you're incredible. I'm very proud of you as a, you know, as a young man, of who you are, the way you represent the company, the way you represent professional wrestling.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
That's always the best part. We laugh and joke all the time, but for real, I'm very just proud of you flat out. And I think it's awesome.
Kevin. Thank you.
Yeah. All right. So where is all this going to go? I mean, obviously, you and Liger, we have to have some tag teaming. But what's the dream scenario? What's the one dream match? Where's the big goal? Where's the big dream?
Oh, I haven't thought about that much, right? Like I really just want to do like the May shows. I really just want to do some tags with Liger in some shape or form. The opponent I'm not really isn't really that big of an hasn't really been a thought for me who the opponent would be. I really would like to like get the tag with Liger on those May shows.
Yeah, they'll come back and they'll be back with us for Sunday May 8th in Chicago, and then the 9th in Detroit, then the 11th Toronto, and then the 14th is New York, I believe, Stars of New Japan return for the annual May events of Global Wars and War of the Worlds, and we'll have a lot of fun. Hey, man, listen, we're out of time, bro. We got to run, but I want to thank you for just all of your – thank you for your time and congratulate you on all of your success. I think it's awesome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me again. It's good talking to you.
Yeah, and now if fans want to follow you on Twitter, they want to talk to you, they want to know – they want to find out when your T-shirt is back on stock, they want to find out what you think of these new flavors of Skittles, how can they reach Cheeseburger?
The best way to reach me would – definitely be my Twitter at CheeseburgerROH. That's pretty much my main social media platform. I don't really mess around with Instagram or have like a if you see a Cheeseburger Facebook account, just FYI, that's a fake account. I don't mess with Facebook too much.
Pete Gass was saying that you know you're over when there's a sign in the crowd. for you. Mm-hmm. Well, I know you also know you're over when there's fake accounts.
Yeah, yeah. There's actually a the only reason I made a cheeseburger Twitter account was because someone had actually made a fake cheeseburger Twitter, and then they started tweeting. They started tweeting people from the roster, like, as me. Like, they're tweeting, like, Shelton Benjamin and stuff like that. I was like, oh, I gotta get this fixed.
Yeah, that's not good. That's not good at all. But, again, you're over, so that's all that matters. all right, so Cheeseburger ROH on Twitter. Make sure you follow him. Everybody on Place to Be Nation, follow him. And we will talk to you again soon. We'll catch up after, the next New Japan excursion, whenever that is. We look forward to that, and I think it'll be great. So hopefully we'll get to travel together over in the month of May. Who knows? But either way, my man, we'll talk soon. I'll see you when? Saturday? I'll see you Saturday.
Yeah, I'll see you Saturday.
Holy crap. What a week this is going to be. All right. So this Saturday, Cheeseburger and the Briscoes against War Machine and Moose, part of the All-Star Cardiff Ring of Honor Wrestling Conquest Tour at the 2300 Arena in Philly. That's Cheeseburger, everybody. Thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thanks, Kevin.
All right, take care. And so that's going to do it for this edition of the Kevin Kelly Show. We'll be back in 2 weeks with a special WrestleMania preview. We will run down the entire card. We will give our picks, and we will also talk about everything having to do with the world of professional wrestling. But 2 weeks from now, special WrestleMania preview. For Dan McGinn and our producer extraordinaire, Justin Rosero, I'm Kevin Kelly. Thanks to our guests, Pete Gass and Cheeseburger, and to all of you for joining us here on the Kevin Kelly Show on the Place to Be Nation and our website home, placetobenation.com.
Wake up to get ready to rig the thing I wore for the ass motorboating.
A tree fell on Greg Abbott.
You know, I'm only 50 now, and the phone could ring at any time.
Basically, because she had Tommy John and had a strong arm, she gave these awesome hand jobs that he was, like, obsessed with.
This honey is from Hazel's Honey Hut.
But by the way, speaking of food and Bush,
I think Chris Jericho is who Michael Hayes would like to be.
Always had a lot of issues with Cox, or have you dealt with Cox better in the past?
I used to enjoy dealing with Cox.
Then people would be more inclined to buy the network and watch the shows.
I'd buy the network for a happy ending.
I do not know where Steve Austin is. He saw the gun. He saw the gun and he left. Oh my God, he's...
I would never thought Rolling Stone... I mean, unless I killed somebody, I don't know.
All right, here we go. So I got to piss. Be right back.
Will you do my wife and I the honor of purchasing you...
Oh, wait a minute.
I don't get butt hurt.
Bye.